Listen, we think you're too soft, bald and thin to be a fucking roadie.
Yeah, when was the last time you beat up a queer? Drank 20 pints, puked on an old lady, shagged a disgustingly ugly boiler, booted her out in the morning after borrowing a tenner?
Well, last night, actually.
You liar.
Well, you can shut the fuck up. You're just a packy bastard who can't play guitar. I bet you've never heard of Jimi Hendrix.
Jimmy who?
From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu.
Tell me best plumber. The night's the night, I'm going for number. Rocks all beavers covered in rust, but you can't put your bird on a 29 bus.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Beer and sex and chips and gravy. It's all a Mac lad wants.
Beer and sex and chips and gravy.
A tasty bitter clump. Top your up off the floor. Finish your chips, we're going for some more.
Hey lads, welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys!
I'm your host, Hunter Deusing, up in the cottage in Macclesfield, England. And joining me is me fellow lad, drinking some beer and eating some chips, Mr. Stuart Bork. Say hello, Stu.
You forgot the gravy, you twat.
Ah, forgot me gravy. And joining me in the Rocky Mountain High, Colorado. We've got England's glory, God's gift to women. Get weaving. He's not a poof, Mr. John Grace.
Hello, everybody.
He is a poof. Beekeeping, pipe smoking poof.
We don't use that politically incorrect language in this country, Stu. The proper word is fag. Oh, sorry.
No,
drop it out.
No, yeah. Tunnel tester. No.
Yeah. Rump wrangler. Yeah. Butt pirate. You know.
Yeah. Turd burglar.
Yeah, that's one.
Cheek potter. Yeah,
so.
Or as Elroy would say, suspect.
Hey, John. You and I, we support Israel. Also, suspect.
Yeah, he's like, you know, suspect.
So, Stuart, the first band of Rock Month for 2018, the Mac Lads.
Yeah.
Who are the Mac Lads? This is a band I had never heard of before you brought it up for Rock Month.
All right.
And then I listened to the first album we're going to cover, Beer and Sex and Chips and Gravy, and I went, oh, that's why.
So, that's why? Why? No. What? Why you've never heard them, or why you thought I...
No. That's why Stuart picked them.
Of course. I'm surprised I didn't do it four or five years ago, to be honest with you. But okay, so the Mac Lads are a band that would barely be known in the US, if at all. There'd be a sprinkling of people out there who know who they are.
They're all expats from the UK and Australia, I imagine.
No, not even over here as well. No, I think they're just predominantly just British. That's about it. And I don't even know, honestly, how far they reached outside of the north of England. I don't even know how much their popularity was down south around London. Heard about them first in 1987, I think it was. Yeah, 1987, they ever came to my radar. And that was in that shop again I mentioned last year in the Rock Month Megadeth with Daniel's store. The German guy who ran the store. And he had the Mac Lads on the right-hand side of the store. If you remember, the left-hand side of the store was the metal side. The right-hand side of the store was your punk rock and ambient stuff like Tangerine Dream, whatever. Mac Lads were there, and the album that was on pinned up on the wall as a new release was Bitterfit Crack. I'm like, oh, it looks interesting. And didn't really listen to it much. The following year, he had Live at Leeds on the wall. I'm like, oh, it's like the same album I saw last year, just different colour, that's all it is. Was going to listen to it, but at the same time, he had an album there by a band called Chaotic Discord, who had an album called Very Fucking Bad, which was a rip-off of Michael Jackson's Bad, like the cover and everything, but just called Very Fucking Bad. So I thought that was funnier. So I gave it a listen, and Chaotic Discord are just terrible. Just not my sort. So I never got into Mac Lads then. But I got into them about 95, I think it was. Pretty much just disbanded by that time. And first one I ever heard was Bisex Chips and Gravy, and got the collection from there on in. So I thought they'd be an interesting take for a couple of reasons. One, because of they're the first band we've covered on Rock Month who pretty much are a comedy band. I'll get into that later, what I'm getting at with that. And number two, they're also, if I remember correctly, going through the archives of Rock Month, the first band who had been disbanded for many, many years. All the other ones we had covered were either still going or coming back and doing reunion shows and active in some way.
Yeah, like the Dictators, you know, officially they've been kind of come back for fits, but, you know, or in various incarnations, but, you know, the Dictators officially, you know, haven't seen a lot of them.
However, just a real quick side note to that. When I thought, I picked the Mac Lads back in January, pretty much start of the year. I pulled out my CDs again and I said, oh, that's it. I'm picking them for Rock Month. It's too good to pass up. I thought, okay, yeah, and they are a band that's been disbanded. They haven't come back since then. Lo and behold, back in about March, Guess Who's now got back together and now during a tour.
The Mac Lads.
Yeah. Pretty
yeah,
much.
I saw but not that as, they got back together this year. I was going, oh.
But not as a three-piece. They've come back as a five-piece.
So. And they've got a different singer, don't they?
Yeah, a guy called Bammy, who I think has been a mate of theirs for, God, since the 80s or even maybe even earlier than that. He's on vocals, so Muttley's not doing the vocals. And there's a second guitarist there with a beater now, who was a guy called Johnny Mard, who was Stez Sticks, the original drummer on the first album. So it's all massive whirlpool, but...
Yeah. The members list on this band is extensive.
Yeah, it's like Deep Purple.
Yeah. Well, it's not Deep Purple. Deep Purple is, a bit more extensive than that.
Well, but, you could build a skyscraper out of Deep Purple's X-Men.
Indeed.
Yeah, Deep Purple Mark 45 is something running around this time of the year. But that's the reason why I chose the Mac Lads. I think they're very humorous. And the cultural differences between them and the US, I'll bring up. And also bring up the differences between them and Australia. But I won't go into it too long, but I have got some points I want to raise on that.
Well, Stu, you may want to bring up probably the difference between them and Southern England.
Yeah.
Because it's very regional.
Okay, I can't... All right. That's a good segue without you actually knowing about it, John.
Uh-huh.
I was talking to my dad earlier this year. It was a time when I found out he told me that I was most likely a British citizen. So I think that was a few months back. And I remember Dad and I have a conversation previously, many, many years ago, about the north of England. Now, Dad is from the south. He's a Londoner.
Your dad's British. You know, he's not a... He's from Britain, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Born there, raised there, but moved over here at age 18 or 19, I think it was.
Well, like Allah Akbar to both of you.
Yeah, I know. He missed that. He got out in time.
It looks like they all are.
And by the way, free Tommy Robinson. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you assholes. So I was talking to my dad about it, and that's right. I was with my brother. We were at Dad's house when he was still living over here and not moving to the state. And we're watching Mr. Methane live on TV, on a videotape. Now, Mr. Methane, who does get his own song on one of these albums, is from Macclesfield as well. Knows the Mac lads, toured with them as well. And Dad walked in, he goes, "Who's this?" Well, he's just Methane's on stage, just farting. Mr. Methane's a flatulist, or as a petoman, if you will.
Right.
For those who don't know. And we go, "Oh, Mr. Methane." He goes, "Well, you're farting." I said, "Yeah, that's what he does." I said, "Why, what's wrong with that?" He goes, "Oh, it's disgusting." I said, "But he's a fellow countryman like you. He's British." He goes, "Where's he from?" I said, "Macclesfield." He goes, silence. "Macclesfield? He's one of them northerners." I said, "Yeah, man." He goes, "Bloody northerners." I said, "What's wrong with the northerners?" He goes, "They're fucking classless is what they are." I was like, "Oh." I said, "Really?" See, don't
well,
like
judging
him much
by then. This album, he may not be wrong.
Nah, that man nailed it. No. I think he...
So anyway, just going back to when I was talking to my dad a couple of months ago, I said, "Hey, Dad, I was just looking at some places up north in the UK. It'd be nice if I can get a place up there to have and, you know, have one back here in Melbourne." He goes, "Why do you want to live up north?" I said, "Well, because it looks nice." I said, "Don't you like north?" He goes, "No, don't like them." I said, "Tell me the rift between the north and the south over there. What is it?" He goes, Stuart, it's just always been going on. It just has been, and it's just something that happens.
Is it from the English Civil War or something?
No, I don't know. Was there one? I don't
pay attention. Charles the First and what's that guy's name? Oliver Cromwell.
Oh, okay. No, I know him.
Yeah.
I know his name anyway. But anyway, yeah, so what the problem is or what the rift is, I couldn't tell you, but yeah, Dad is from South London and yeah, doesn't particularly like North as much. Or North. But I guess the people up north don't like Southern as much, so that's just the way
it is. It's kind of like here in America.
Yeah.
Kind of like here in Sydney as well. Just mm-hmm. don't like each other. That's all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's that regional split, you know.
It's like that in Italy, I think, right?
It's what Washington warned us about, sectionalism.
Yeah. I think it's common in a lot of countries.
Could be. But yeah, that was that. So,
This first album, Beer, Sex, Chips, and Gravy, 1985.
I should just say real quick that this is actually the second album. There was a first album released on cassette only back in 82 or 83, 83 I think it was, which comprised pretty much all the songs off of Beer, Sex, but I think it got pulled or they just didn't sell enough or just sold them all and that was it. But basically re-recorded it for 1985's Beer Six, which is class
kinda
release for some.
In the punk scene, you know, like
yeah,
a lot of groups, you know, they would do some songs or an EP and then re-record them for a more proper studio release or something.
And all albums were released on a label called Hectic House Records. Hectic House was actually the name of the record store in Macclesfield that Muttley ran. So, yeah. And their actual rehearsal space was upstairs above the record store.
Righteous.
Yeah.
So this album, you got Muttley McLeod on vocals and bass, The Beater on guitar, Stez Styx on drums, and the track list, you got 19 tracks. So like a good punk album, it's a lot of short songs. You got the lads from Mac, Beer and Sex and Chips and Gravy. Bodies, in case you didn't know, this album was brought to you by Boddington's Pub Ale. Sweaty Betty, England's Glory, Blackpool, Miss Macclesfield, God's Gift to Women, Get Weavin', Now He's a Poof, Nagasaki Sauce, which apparently is the Macclesfield Cricket Club's victory song. Saturday Night, Buenos Aires, Charlotte, Failure with Girls. You don't say. Do You Love Me? Do You Love Me? Dan's Underpant, 20 Pints, and the Macleod's Party.
You sound very Scottish there, you realize, don't you?
I when it came out, I went, that sounds way too Scottish. That's what I was thinking when I said that.
Should ask your friend Morgan what he thinks of the Macleods.
He was rocking out to Obituary and pallbearer last night. So
they do sound like a fat bastard in some phrasing. So,
well, just a real quick thing that I was thinking about was, you take a British band, you take an American band, you take an Australian band, or whoever, and when they sing, you won't really know where they're from until you hear them speak in a normal voice in an interview or something. The Macklades are different because they don't try to hide their northern voices or the way they say things to their dialects. Like, you know, they say Luke instead of look. just all sorts of variations on words they'll have. Yeah, so it's very, very hard to hide, and it's very easy to tell where they're from, if you get my meaning.
Right.
But, yeah. So, BSX, Chips and Gravy, first one I ever heard, and to me, this album sounds a lot like The Clash's first album, without all the stupid socialist lyrics and shit in it.
Well, luckily, I couldn't understand any of their socialist lyrics in the first album because they sang, I think, with contrived fake accents.
Yeah.
Because they were all, I mean, The Clash were all posh. They were all like, you know, their dads worked for the embassies and stuff.
Oh, yes.
Like,
Drummer's whole band worked for, what was it, the Turkish embassy or something like that?
Yeah. They were like faking these working class accents. Yeah. And that's why they were all hardline commies.
Yeah, that's right. But anyway, I'd heard this album, I can't even think how many times. But it was the first time for you boys. I gotta know. I got a fair idea, but Hunter, I'm asking you first because you're about a dozen years younger than John and I. And also, as well, I'm asking you because I tend to think, and no offense, I think John gets the British humor a bit more than you do, even though you get it. Does that make sense?
That's probably true. I mean, what I thought about the Macklads was it's, you know, and this is not an insult, but it's incredibly lowbrow humor from what I picked up from it.
Well, define lowbrow. As in like juvenile sort of humor.
It's juvenile, like a lot of flatulent humor. In fact, as the discography went on, I was sitting there going, okay, you know, I'm getting a little weary of the graphic VD descriptions. You know, but I mean, there's a lot of funny stuff in there, though. You know, but you know, do I appreciate British humor? Absolutely.
Yeah,
I do. I think I get British humor. I mean, I've grown up watching it. Monty Python serves as a gateway to that, and
yeah, I'm talking about the generational difference between John and I and yourself.
For sure. And you know, but I think this stuff, being fans of politically incorrect humor, I think this stuff is great in that regard. I mean, especially on the last album, there's some stuff where I was going, a little more sensitive today, maybe. But yeah. This first album, Beer Sex, is a little more. It's very barroom humor. It's a lot of the songs are about getting drunk, eating junk food, and fornicating with dubious females. Seems to be the order of the day with this.
Fit crack. Okay. I guess there's a lot of things there you wouldn't pick up as well, like terminology, like fit crack. You probably, what the hell
is
that?
Yeah, okay. That was something I wanted to ask about, because when I hear crack, I think of, you know, smoking crack.
No.
Like, you know,
no.
like really lowbrow urban drug use, you know. So with this, I was going, they talk about crack a lot on a lot of these albums, and I was going, I don't think that's what they're talking. When I was listening to it, I was going, okay, I don't think they're talking about smoking crack.
No. Crack is a woman's vagina.
All right.
It looks like
Hunter just threw up in his mouth.
Well, that's what it is. It's looks like a crack.
And here's the thing. It's the way they describe this stuff.
Yeah.
In these albums. I mean, it's so the thing about the Macklads that, you know, they have a lot of fun melodies and guitar playing, but there's a lot of songs that are about really dubious sexual activity
I don't find none of it offensive at all.
Oh, I don't find it offensive. It's just
I find it fun. I find it incredibly funny, actually, because it is what it is. It's just toilet humor. That's all it is.
Oh yeah.
And,
oh, it totally.
You know, in all honesty, I would rather listen to the Mac lads sing about pulling crack and eating chips and gravy and going to Gordon's and drinking bodies and anything else than I would anything of rap music with its ridiculous... I find rap music lyrics fucking abrasive than what the Mac lads ever were.
You are not at all... you're preaching to the choir here, bud, because a lot of rap music, makes me ill. Physically ill.
Yeah, I thought it was comparable to Two Live Crew.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Two Live Crew is the same type of... a lot of sex humor and scatology and other scatological humor and that sort of stuff. There's a lot of that there.
Yeah, but I don't know.
But I mean, you're not going to hear Two Live Crew anymore.
But what's
not
funny about
mainstream rap at all.
But so. What's funny is a lot of mainstream rap has a pretense that there's no consequences for this kind of activity. Whereas if you listen to the Mac lads, you're probably going to come away with if I'm promiscuous, I'm probably going to get a disease.
Yeah.
So in a funny way, it does have a pretty realistic outlook on picking up bar winches.
Right. But it's kind of like it reminds me of in the 80s, the Two Live Crew. It wasn't mainstream rap at all. Although thanks to some senators in Florida,
thanks to Bob Dole. Let's name.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for that.
Bob Dole popularized them in Cannibal Corpse.
Right. Two Live Crew was sort of like a party record, like Rudy Ray Moore or Richard Pryor in the early days, or Red Fox. It wasn't meant to be taken seriously as mainstream music, or even sold as mainstream music, and it got popular because of Bob Dole running his mouth about him and complaining. And it was a party record that was
Bob Dole.
Yeah. Spread around by word of mouth. I mean, Luther Campbell, their lead rapper, was going by the name of Luke Skywalker until they started selling records. Thanks to Bob Dole. And George Lucas sent him a cease and desist. So he didn't even know about him for the first few records. So, with the Mac lads, that's the vibe I got. Was it's like if Sham 69 made, the X-rated party record that David Allan Coe made in the 70s. And it's only sold in the back of biker mags. Like, and often denied that he recorded them for a long time until you found clips of him singing those songs on, like, Al Goldstein's Midnight Blue and stuff on YouTube. But it reminded me of that. It was that it's like if Sham 69 recorded, like, a party record not meant to go out under their name. I started wondering if it was one of those groups from that scene, like the Oi scene, actually doing like a goof until I read their bios and was like, oh, okay, so it was actually an organized thing.
Yeah. But lyrics aside on this one, and all their albums as well, pretty much, I just think the Mac lads are really, really good, decent musicians.
Yeah, they are. They're very, very
skilled. It's not like, I mean, you can have these types of lyrics and then have really shit music, and then you're just like, well, these are just a throwaway. They're no good. But I mean, the beat is a great guitarist, in my opinion. Muttley's a solid bass player. I mean, good singer? No, not really. But his vocals don't need to be like Robert Plant or somebody. It's not going to suit it.
No, they're good. They're good barroom vocals, I think. And the musicianship, it has that good, fast rockabilly stuff you want from punk rock, you know?
Yeah. This one's a more of a punk rock. Their sound evolves and comes in waves, in types of sounds throughout the albums. It's predominantly punk rock, but this is, like I said, this reminds me a lot of the first Clash album. One after the other after the other. That first Clash album was really good.
Yeah, that first Clash album's great. And this, like you said, it is like that first record, but it's more debaucherous lyrics instead of the more posh elite socialist lyrics.
The only thing I think would make a difference listening to the Mac lads would be when you first heard them. So you guys first heard them now, where they're trying to program you to say this is horrible and this is rude and this is disgusting and this is outrageous. So when you hear some of the things they do say, You think, oh my God, it's disgusting. But when I first heard them back in the mid-90s, it wasn't like that. And, you know, definitely not back in the 80s it wouldn't have been had I first heard them in 85 when this came out. It was just commonplace. And also depends on the country you're in. No disrespect to America, but it tends to be a bit more stiff with its what you can and can't say.
Yeah, you know, you have your sort of sexual, silly punk rock from the 90s. You know, like your Blink 182 and Bowling for Soup, but it's not as explicit as this.
Nah.
Like this talks very graphically about venereal disease a lot.
You know? Yeah.
You know, it's especially with like there's a lot of songs about like nasty women and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But it's also the difference in language, because the word cunt is not a taboo word in England, whereas in America you just don't say it.
Oh, absolutely.
It's,
yeah, you can't say
that.
It's
not taboo here either.
I mean, you know, when I would work with British filmmakers, they would say that all the time, and then they'd get upset over things Americans would say.
Just watch the film Nil by Mouth, if you want to.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, God. I saw that at a screening before it was released, like for a film festival. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a full-on movie, that one. But,
oh, yeah.
Also, Gary Oldman directed that, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Our favorite conservative in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, look, like I said, I don't think this album to me is not offensive in any way. The one thing I want to say is this. There was this whole new wave of British comedy. You thought I was going to say heavy metal there for a second. That did happen, but... There was a whole new wave of British comedy that came out in the very late 70s and through the 80s. And that was the comic strip crew with Peter Richardson, Rick Mayall, Adrian Emerson, Nigel Planer, Keith Allen, French and Saunders, and Alexis Hale, and a few others in there. You also had Hale and Pace, and you also had the 9 o'clock news crew as well. Pamela Stevenson, Rowan Atkinson, and Smith and Jones. The Mac Lads, to me, are just a musical version of those comedy troupes. That's all they are.
Now, wait.
Listen.
Okay. All right.
Hear me out for a sec. Yes, their comedy is more brash than the comedy of the comic strip, let's say. But for those of you who own the comic strip box set, there was a 30-minute movie done in there at the very start of their careers, done by Julian Temple, the filmmaker who gave us The Great Rock and Roll Swindle and a few others.
Filth and the Fury, yeah.
Absolute Beginners.
Fury. Yeah. He did a 30-minute short film on them, and the humor in that and some of the visuals you got were no worse than what you find in a Mac Lad song. Yet now, tell me how they can become household names throughout Britain with their type of humor, yet when you put it in a song with the Mac Lads, all of a sudden it's offensive and they're banned from every place they want to play, and the albums have got massive banners across the front saying not to be sold to miners.
I think, not to miners or engineers, I think was the...
No, it wasn't.
But I think it's because words put images in people's heads, you know?
But we got words spoken by comedians as well.
Oh, sure. No, I'm not defending it. I'm just saying...
I actually find that, somebody more like Alexis Sale more offensive than the Mac Lads.
Well, I was going to say, weren't a lot of the comic strip guys like Alexis Sale and Ben Elton kind of on that PC anti-comedy crusade in a way? Like, oh, Benny Hill's a dirty old man and you shouldn't laugh at him and that sort of thing. You got to listen to our brilliant alternative comedy.
Well, I think I'm more saying it was probably a dinosaur of comedy than what he was doing.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. But, I mean, I just think... I honestly would lump the Mac Lads in with that wave of... as you said, alternative comedy was more the term I was looking for.
Right. Oh, I think the expression I hear it from British podcasters, whose names I can never remember, but they'll say, oh, I don't like Andrew Dice Clay's humor because it feeds the hate that's out there. And that became a common, like, meme thing to say, like, 10 years ago. I don't like Gallagher making conservative jokes because it feeds the hate that's out there.
Yeah,
Obama was president, everybody's like, "Oh, how dare you say anything against his policy?"
It gives ammo to racists.
Yeah, that bullshit. You know.
Okay, but the thing is with Dice Clay was the way his was not so much what he said, because I still found some of his stuff funny, but the problem with Dice Clay, I think, to the people, it was the way he delivered it. His was always spat out with venom and anger, and you think, this isn't really funny. Because this guy is angry. He's trying to do... You got an angry guy on stage doing comedy. Makes no sense.
I never found him angry, but I think people took his act out of context. Like, he's a bully. You know, he's a jock bully in his persona. So I think that's the way he really was.
I think it was something like Dice is the Chad jock that I hate. You know,
yeah.
He represents the guys that I didn't like growing up.
Although if you actually interview Andrew Clay, he was kind of a Buddy Rich fan who was bullied in school. He wasn't a jock.
Yeah, he wasn't a jock. It was kind of that was the character he played with.
Yeah, he was spoofing like a Travolta, you know, basically a Jewish guy pretending to be Italian.
That's yeah, he was exactly. I mean, Dice was the Dice Man.
Right.
As we know him was sort of doing a lark on the sort of the Chad Guido.
Yeah, people get that wrong. They think that's the way he really is. Like, okay, who has not been named in Me Too? Dice.
Oh! Oh!
It's still not named. Oh!
You don't see me over there, Harvey. Oh!
I had an affair with Terry Hatcher. She came to my room. Oh! Which he did. It's in his autobiography. He admits to having an affair with her on the set of Brain Smasher. But
listen, I did a movie with Woody Allen. I can't really comment.
It's like, but seriously,
soon
like,
ye, not, I fucked her. Oh,
blind her with dental floss. Come on.
Yeah, and that's a good point. You don't see Dice, you know, thrown into the whole Me Too thing. It's the Hollywood power brokers out there, like Morgan Freeman as well.
It's the Harveys. It's the guys with the ficus plant.
Yep.
Yeah. It's Bugman. This guy's glasses, beards.
By the way, I loved it. They were saying Harvey Weinstein was planning to do a documentary about himself.
I was framed. And then he's going to go after the NRA through half the documentary.
Yeah, I'm planning on focusing my energy on the NRA.
Good. Oh, God.
Okay.
Jeez. Focus energy on weight loss and getting your skin fixed. Do you go to jail?
Goggle.
I've hated Harvey Weinstein for so long.
I never liked him. So
indicted today. You know, enjoy.
Was he? Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Cause for celebration. All right. So anyway, let's move on from this one.
What do we rate it, fellas? Mac Lads, I think this is kind of their definitive record. What do you give it, Stuart?
For me, it is absolutely a 10 out of 10. I can't fault any songs on here. 19 songs and not one bad one in my book. It's that's a fair effort. Also, must say, my favorite song out of the whole album. I've got quite a few. There's Now He's a Poof. I like Bodies. I like Nagasaki Sauce. Lads from Mac, but my favorite is Beef Sex Chips and Gravy is the best one on the whole album.
That is kind of, I think if you wanted to find a song that encapsulates the Mac Lads concept, that's the song that does it. For me, I'd give this one an 8. I think it's a solid rock and roll record, good punk rock record. It's a little graphic for me at times, but
was this one played around Amy at all? Or
no, it was not. I'm not that stupid. Although it's funny, I played Marillion's Garden Party, and she read the lyrics and went, "This song is incredibly British."
Oh, really?
Yeah, she went.
I thought you were going to say she just went.
This song is so British.
Yeah.
But favorite song for me, I don't know. I think I'm probably with you on Beer, Sex, Chips, and Gravy, but just because that's the Mac Lads anthem right there.
Pretty much.
You know.
It's good to hear other voices on the album as well besides just Muttley's. You get the beater on Bodies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What about you, John?
I give it a 7. I thought there was some very funny stuff on here, and there's some stuff I didn't find funny, but the music was consistently good.
Mm.
Like I said, it sounds like something from the late 70s out of the Oi scene. Like, it's very, like, well played. Like, really good musicianship. Probably a bit better than what you get out of Sham 69 or some of those other groups. Slaughtering the Dogs.
I'll say, all those guys. Even if there were... even the songs where I didn't really care for the lyrics, the musicianship was always fun. I mean, that one thing with this band is I never was unhappy with the guitar playing or the beats or anything. It was always, you know, solid to me.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
All right. Well, next album, 1987, we've got Bitter Fit Crack with Muttley McLeod on vocals and bass, the beater on guitar, and Chorley the Horde on drums.
Yeah.
The track list, we've got Barrels Round, Guess Me Weight, Uncle Nobby, Maid of the Ale, Dan's Big Log, Got to Be Gordon's, Bitter Fit Crack.
Cut the Scottish accent. Cut the Scottish accent, just please. It's Scottish. It's not
American. Yeah, I'm waiting for you to get out. Babies, the other white meat.
Baby, Doctor, Torremolinos, Alopecia, and Feed Your Face. So this is their follow up. Sounded a little more polished production wise.
Yeah, it is. It's different. It's still got that sound. It hasn't got that raw, dirty punk rock sound.
Honestly,
of the first one.
Like. One thing about the Mac Lads, their sound is consistent. It's a little more polished than this one, but it's consistent.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one, just under 30 minutes, flies right by.
Zips right by it pretty quick as well, yeah. But good album. Very good album. Got some songs in here, though, I've always questioned, like Uncle Nobby. I thought, I get what you're trying to do, but by far, lyrically, it's the darkest they ever did in my book.
Yeah, that one... That one I was going, this song's creepy. I don't like it.
Yeah, with the kids saying, Dear Uncle Nobby, it's like, oh, God. If any of the songs, I've said before, the band don't really upset me lyrically, but Uncle Nobby's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah,
Muttley, with that one. But
it was pretty dark.
Yeah, it is. But it's got some crackers on there as well. I like Got to Be Gordon, so I like Dan's Big Log quite a bit. I like Barrels Round. Feed Your Face is an absolute masterpiece, which not getting any radio airplay, I think, that one, ever. Yeah. What about you guys? What do you think of it?
John, what do you think? I kind of gave my thoughts.
I thought it was a step down. It sounds better fidelity-wise. I didn't think the songs were as strong. Like, and it also leans more to the scat shit humor that I don't really care about. But there's good stuff on here. You know, there's funny stuff, but yeah, stuff like Uncle Nobby's just weird. To me, it kind of reached like Hustler Larry Flint humor on this one. So it's like Chester the Molester or something.
Yeah.
It's not really my thing. You know, it was probably more funnier to people in 85. And also, you know, had I heard these guys when I was younger, I would probably dig them a lot more I'm turning 46 next month. It's just like, it doesn't have the same appeal it would have had to me were I say 17 or 18.
I'm with you there.
Yeah. If I were younger, I would have, you know, that'd probably be my favorite band for a couple of years.
I want to ask you something, Hunter, because I thought about this as well.
Mm.
You said you found the lyrics towards the depiction of women in this a bit much?
Or, no, you know, it's not the depiction of women. It's just the imagery, you know, the visual, like... Because earlier you talked about the films versus the songs, right? It's just there's a lot of graphic descriptions of venereal disease, right? And that's what is, you know, vomit-inducing to me.
Well, I can actually add to that. If you believe in neuro-linguistic programming, there's two types of descriptions. There is visual description. There's verbal description. And this, their song lyrics are very much in the visual side.
Oh, so, yes.
You know, so.
I would agree with that. And
well, they have to be in the visual side because you're singing lyrics to convey an image.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, like
not...
the Stones, you could, okay, you listen to Mick Jagger and Keith Richards' lyrics, and it's probably verbal. It's action, you know. It's what they're doing. But here, they're describing stories. A lot like country music lyrics. Old country music lyrics will tell a story, like a George Jones song or something written by Hank Williams or, you know, something Porter Wagoner might sing. It's going to give you a visual story. And that's what you're getting here, except it's extremely R-rated.
No, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But I think that it kind of speaks to the Mac Lads' sort of cheeky talent that they're able to conjure up, like, shocking or revolting images.
Yeah, it's I think it's like the music equivalent of Viz Comics,
yeah,
which is a very vulgar, gross, sort of a Mad Magazine of England, I guess would be a comparison. But they'd have characters like the Fat Slags. Yeah,
Mad was far more tame than Viz ever was.
Yeah, Viz was way, way more. Yeah, Mad is nothing like. Viz is actually probably. It's like a comic strip equivalent in America, might be the National Lampoon or maybe some underground comics or something.
Yeah,
but
the very early National Lampoon ones, yeah.
Yeah, Viz,
Robert Crumb.
Yeah, Viz is very scatological, probably like a Robert Crumb type of thing or those weird Canadian cartoonists. It's very. It's gross. I've only seen a few issues that I bought off Mile High Comics on eBay of all places, and it's kind of hard to understand if you're American. Like, even somebody like me who takes in a lot of British entertainment, I had problems understanding the humor.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's because we've had such a British influence upon us in our country here compared to yourselves over there. I don't know. You know, you appreciate British humor like you guys do because you're selecting it for yourself to watch.
Yeah.
Okay. Whereas definitely. I grew up around it, being right. Part of the Commonwealth, obviously. You have, you know, us being what we class as what the little brother to Great Britain. You know, everything upon you here is derived from a British culture. Mm-hmm. So, and also having a British father as well, as I've said many times before in the past, that's where I was getting at before, the cultural differences, I think, really come into it. I mean, you couldn't take this band and back in 85, 86, 87, whatever, and have them go to Middle America or South.
Unsellable. You had problems with punk bands that nowadays we'd find so tame. You know?
Yeah.
It's just, people made a big deal because Jim Morrison said shit in one of his songs, so it's just...
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I think the Children of the Ramones and stuff were the 90s punk bands, but the 90s punk bands were a little more vulgar, they were a little more edgy for America with their lyrical content, but they weren't as graphic or as upfront as the Mac Lads, but it was kind of a more extreme version of the same kind of thing, maybe.
Yeah, they weren't even as graphic as the Dead Kennedys, who also worked in that same visual style lyric, you know, telling stories or, you know, a lot of times you're getting a narrative the whole time, like Forest Fire or one of those songs. You're getting a whole narrative of a story.
Well, I will say that Feed Your Face is by far the best song about the African starvation crisis ever.
Well, we'll get there. I have more. There's an American side to that I want to talk about.
So
what would we give Bitter Fit Crack? Stuart, what would you give this follow-up?
I'll give it an 8. It's, like John said, more polished. That's evident as soon as you pop it on. There's a couple of songs in there that are like Uncle Nobby. Yeah, just don't really do it for me. But still a solid effort. I would not try and dissuade anybody from listening to it or purchasing it, for sure. I'd say go get it. It's an essential of their discography.
For sure. I'd give it a 7. I think it musicianship-wise, to step up, but I think the previous album was more of an encapsulation of what the band's about.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
The first album just sounded like them just trying to get something out there. I think from memory, look, I may be wrong. I think the first album was done in a day. It was all done in one day.
It's like some of the Misfits albums. They just didn't. Yeah,
they always were.
Yeah, but
the Ramones supposedly did theirs in 2 days.
Yep.
Well, I mean, we got the whole thing of why a band needs 4 years at all. Now, get fucked. I mean, that's insane.
I know. It's like Tool needs a decade and a half to do a record.
But, Axl Rose needed 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what quality you got.
Do you think Axl Rose is bad? Look at Tool. Look at some of these other bands. I mean, they're terrible. I mean,
it's all because Brian Wilson went nuts in the studio in the 60s. And
yeah. Okay. Yeah. My mother-in-law, massive Brian Wilson fan. She loves Brian Wilson, and she doesn't get why people. She gets it, but she goes, "Look, the Beach Boys made better albums than Smile. Come on."
Yeah. Pet Sounds, man, greatest album ever.
I know, Pet Sounds a classic.
I was talking to her about it this weekend, and we were talking, and she said, you know, we were talking about how it's the myth around Smile and around Pet Sounds, whereas, you know, the Beach Boys did great records before that didn't have the, it's just the crazy genius stuff that people latch on to.
See, I think Jan and Dean made way better songs. And I think if you like the Beach Boys, you really got to check out Jan and Dean.
Greatest Beach Boys song ever? Surfing. Not Surfing USA, Surfing's the best one. And always gets left off the compilations.
Did you give your rating, John? I can't remember.
I'm going to give this one a 5.5. That's only because some of these songs are just annoying. But there's good stuff on here. I'm not going to tell anybody. Don't listen to it. No.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's just sub songs. The negatives kind of hurt it a bit. But, you know, I still say check it out. I mean, if you check out the first album based on our show, you're going to check out the second album.
That's the second album. If you like the first album, you'll like the second one.
There's some good songs on here. So
there's some good songs on that record. I have it on CD. I can play it in my car.
Cuts.
My theoretical car I don't have because I live in Jersey.
Yeah.
You can't pump your own gas.
People try to run me off the road because they listen to rock music.
Well, I don't even live in Jersey these days.
I had a UFO 8-track and they were trying to run me off the road because I was blasting it.
I'm always on the road. Always in Oklahoma. In fact, my son rang me up the other day and said, "Dad, when are you coming home?" I said, "Well, go to my page, the trunk report, and check the dates there. If New Jersey's not on there, I ain't coming home, kid."
Paul Stanley kicked me out.
If you want to know why I'm not coming home, ask Paul Stanley. It's his fault.
Can't believe they won't ask Ace Frehley wear the costume on stage.
Just imposters.
So let's go to the next record. We got Macladd's Live at Leeds, The Who. The Who? Question mark.
Yeah.
And this is 1988. This is a live record. We got Sweaty Betty, Ben Nevis, Bloink, Do You Love Me, God's Gift to Women, Charlotte, Blackpool, Lads from Mac, Now He's a Poof, Dr. Doctor, Julie the Schoolie, Guess Me Wait, Miss Macclesfield, Fat Bastard, Get Weavin', and Battle Round. So this album I thought was a lot of fun. I thought the live audience interactions were entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, because it almost felt like and this is not an insult, this is a compliment. It almost felt like a comedy routine where they were able to sort of weave into the next song with their audience interactions.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm getting at. This is a comedy band. You don't write lyrics like this to not make people laugh. I mean, you'd be a fool. Anyone would be a fool to think, "Oh, these guys are serious." No, they're not fucking serious. It's all a laugh. That's all it is. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. Manowar are far more offensive than the Macladds. Because they take that crap seriously. They run around in loincloths and they sing about the gates of Valhalla and doing the will of Odin and Metal Brothers and the loudest band in the world. And they believe that shit.
We should respect that.
I've never heard Manowar. I've just seen photos of them constantly.
Okay.
I just
changed my Rock Month nomination, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. I'll be there that week.
Man, I know Ross the Boss is in that group, right?
Oh, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Ross the Boss. Let's not forget.
Who has a new band?
Oh, yeah. Is that Death Dealer?
I thought they were called Ross the Boss.
Yeah, he had a band
called he has a band called Ross the Boss, which is kind of a power metal band. So, okay. But Manowar is currently on their farewell tour. So,
is Ross with him?
No.
Okay.
No, he hasn't been there for ages.
Yeah, he's definitely too fat to get into the loincloth these days.
Oh, is he?
I should say though, he is a conservative.
Oh yeah, nice. Ross the Boss is he's like the Ted Nugent of power metal. You know.
Yeah, he is. If on his Facebook page for the longest time, he would get into fights with like. A guy who was one of the guys for the Dead Boys, who was like a real liberal. They were just getting into these arguments all the time.
Yeah. So Manowar's on a farewell tour, are they?
Yeah, they're on their farewell tour right now.
Oh, good. They call it a farewell tour. I call it a fuck off and die tour.
I said that about Sabbath's last farewell tour. It's like, please get those.
I went and saw them. So
you saw Sabbath
on their farewell tour? Yeah.
Okay. How was it?
You got sucked.
It was good. It was not bad. Was
Ozzy on a couch?
No, Ozzy took his shirt off at one point, which I was like, no, don't do it, Ozzy.
Oh, no, that's terrible.
No! But it was pretty good, though. I was not disappointed. I thought it was great.
I am waiting for the day when Ozzy has a brain fart on stage, and instead of just saying, oh, you guys are fucking crazy! He actually comes out and says, I'm only here because Sharon told me we need more money! Which is true.
Well, you know, that's always a possibility. I just hope that now that they're done, Tony and Glenn do another record together. I don't know.
Iommi? No, he's pretty crook, isn't he?
No. Tony's still good. He had his cancer thing for a bit, and I think he said, you know, it's going to come back and probably kill him, but... You know, he's still around.
Okay. Still churning out them riffs.
Yeah, he's the riff lord.
Yeah. Yeah, but getting to the live album, I really enjoy this a bit. I actually find the audience interaction just as good as the songs.
Oh, yeah.
They talk about that one guy in the crowd with the glasses, and he goes, it's one of the fucking Proclaimers.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was great. Yeah.
Hey, you're one of the fucking Proclaimers. Fuck off.
No, Live at Leeds I thought was a really fun record. It's a little heavy on the VD songs, which...
I guess maybe everybody in the North gets VD. That's like a rite of passage.
Could be. I don't know. It's a very common theme in their songs.
Did I miss an Andy Capp strip where he got VD? That's why he beat his wife or whatever, and did she hit him?
Maybe it's shagging all that crack. You're bound to get something.
I got a stack of Andy Capp paperbacks from like the 60s by Smythe, and I can't understand a single fucking joke in any of them. I try.
I don't think any people have gotten the actual joke of Andy Capp.
Yeah.
The name. Have they? Handicap. No, they haven't got
not
it.
Not at all. No.
Because a lot of the Brits usually drop the H when they say something like
Andy Capp.
Andy Capp, yeah.
I've got an Andy Capp, mate.
If you've ever read it, like the only things you're gonna laugh at is a slapstick where like he punches a salesman or something.
Who's that buddy guy? That comedian? No, Dick Emery. Sounds like Dick Emery.
Yeah. It's just like he'll call a salesman a twit and punch him in the face because you know he stirred him in his bath or whatever. He'll have the cigarette hanging out of his mouth and the fucking pram hat and all that shit.
Like that time when my old man was getting the fridge delivered, and they said, oh yeah, we'll be there about 10 o'clock. And he goes, okay, so he waited around all day. Me and my brother got there about 3 o'clock. I said, get your fridge, Dad. He goes, I haven't turned up yet. We're waiting all fucking day for it. I said, oh, okay. 5 o'clock rolls around. I said, well, Dad, when's these guys coming? I don't know, but when you get to here, I'm going to smash that fucking cunt right in the eye, I am. I'm like, oh, okay. A guy turned up like 5 minutes later. Dad's like, hey, go on, mate. All right. Good to see you. It's like, oh, you're a fucking hypocrite, Dad. Seriously.
That's
by the way, the doctor on here is not the UFO doctor, just FYI.
It's not the Robert Palmer doctor?
No, not that one either.
Yeah, I didn't get it. Live at Leeds wasn't on my file download, so.
It wasn't?
It wasn't. For some reason, it didn't extract or something. So I was like,
oh, it's online.
Sometimes I think I should go, I could go find him on YouTube, do backups just in case, you know, since I listen to this stuff at my computer.
I know what happened there. That's because it went through a poof checker. with you. And he said, nah, he's a fucking poof, so forget it. He couldn't handle it.
All right, so what do we give Live at Leeds, still? What would you give it?
I'm going to give it... I'd give it an 8.5. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'd give it an 8. I think it's a really fun live record. This was one of the ones I have more fun
with. And it's
with.
Not Fabricated Man in the studio like Kiss Alive 1 and 2, brah.
No, dude, it's not Anton Figg playing the drums instead of Peter Criss, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. A bunch of imposters. My childhood's been ruined.
Jesus.
So, John, you didn't get to hear this one?
Nah, I didn't get to hear it. I can't rate it. So.
All right.
I'll rate it for John. John gave it an 8.
John gave it an 8. Good job, John. Okay,
based on reputation, 8.
So the next album is From Beer to Eternity, not to be confused with the terrible Ministry album From Beer to Eternity.
Oh, those plagiarist fuckers.
I know. Al Jorgensen, you know, that guy, he needs to go die with his Antifa friends. But this
Al
is
Jorgensen, the same Al Jorgensen from the With Sympathy album where he's trying to be a Europop singer. Boy, he doesn't want you knowing that one, does he? Yeah. And even trying to sound British in his songs. What was that?
I'm not an effigy.
Not an effigy. Walk right in the room with me mum and me dad. I was like, fuck off, Al. You're not...
Luckily, I never liked those guys.
Ministry, he acts like he had nothing to do with that. And no, pretty sure, Al, you did.
He spearheaded the whole damn thing. What's he talking about?
He's full of it. He's one of these guys who, after the fact, was trying to be cool.
It's like even with the Twitch album or whatever the hell you call that thing, that album, I don't know. Even when he's doing the song like Over the Shoulder, he's singing Over the Shoulder. He's still got that British twinge to his voice.
Yeah, it wasn't until he's trying to be like Depeche Mode, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like the naked mariachi band in Orgasmo, you know?
I don't want to sound like a fag or anything. Don't you think that band sounds like Depeche Mode?
Band sounds like Depeche Mode.
He's trying to attract that fashy audience. Jeez.
Yeah, So, next album, 1989, From Beer to Eternity. We have a good 17 songs. We've got Alton Towers, Geordie Girl, Bloink, No Sheep Till Buxton, All Day Drinking, Tab After Tab, Lucy Lastic, My Pub, Dead Cat, Lady Muck, Gordon's Revenge, Pie Taster, Dan's Round Us and Bag, Ben Nevis, Fluffy Pup, Stoppy Back, and Ugly Women. And I got to say, No Sheep Till Buxton is a favorite of mine off this one.
Really? Yeah, this version's good. The one on the actual EP is better, I find.
I just love the little fluffy fellas. I don't know. For some reason, I was laughing out loud while listening to that song.
Yeah, I think the Pie Taster 12-inch has got the better version where it's got all the actual sheep sounds inserted throughout. And then Motley go, and then Motley at the end going, "Was it good for you?" But yeah, that's not on the album version. But yeah, no Beta on this album. He's gone, disappeared this time. Yep. You got McCavity on there, Philip Fast Fret McCavity on guitar, Motley and Chorley on the drums still. And this one sounds a bit more. I say this bit more metal sounding. It's just McCavity's guitar sound is different.
The song where they go heavy metal.
Yeah, that's on Blank. Yeah,
I recognize some Ted Nugent guitar riffs in this album.
Yeah,
like
I did too. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I really like this album, but there's the version of Blank on here I don't like. I prefer the one on the Jingle Cast single. It's much better. The No Sheep to Buxton one's still good, but I prefer the one on Pie Taster. But yeah, McCavity's guitar sounds good. If you look at McCavity himself. It kind of looks like a jockey on meth. He's this tiny little guy. But, yeah. Good guitarist. Good album, by the way. I think I find the second half of the album more enjoyable than the first half. But I do like that first half. That first half still. What was that song? All Day Drinking.
I love No Sheep Till Buxton. I like Bloik. Yeah, it's got good stuff on that first half.
Yeah, all day drinking as well. Muttley goes in the McDonald's. Well, the guy's spotty little twat. All right, so what were your thoughts on this one, John?
Well, I like the appropriation of Ted Nugent riffs because it told me what their influences were. I thought it was pretty funny. It was actually, for whatever reason, I like it better than the last one, maybe because it just had more songs, and so you get more of the humor spread out, and there's a better balance, but it's a fun record.
And, John, it does show us that Ted Nugent influence extends beyond Minor Threat, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you can't tell me all these guys weren't listening to Ted Nugent over in England.
Oh, they totally were. It's funny when you bring that up to people and they look at you funny and you go, come on, dude.
Yeah, but Ted wasn't as political back then in the 70s.
No, but he wasn't, but because they all think of him through the modern paradigm.
That's right. You
know? And they don't understand that Ted influenced, like, the straight edge movement, you know? They don't see the influence the Nuge had on that.
Ted was considered heavy metal up until about 83 or so.
Yeah, I was talking to a teacher at school about that, and he was kind of looking at me funny, and I was like, come on, dude.
Yeah, the Nuge, it's a total metal nickname.
But yeah, it's
heavy metal was a different thing in the 70s. Yeah, it's hard exactly. to explain to people today.
Yeah, it's kind of, even people who lived it kind of have a hard time making the connection. It's funny. Yeah.
And I will tell you, as somebody who saw him play before, like, a couple of thousand bikers, more metal than Metallica.
Oh, Metallica, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I saw Metallica live, and all I remember was rednecks throwing bottles up on stage. Nobody threw a fucking bottle at Ted Nugent.
It's just like, no, they won't. Lest ye get an arrow through the heart if you do.
And, yeah, exactly. It's totally fucking metal.
Okay, so from Beer to Eternity, Stuart, what would you give it?
Well, favorite song from this one, I'll say for a start. I like Stoppy Back quite a bit. It's a different sounding one. I like No Ship to Buxton. I like Ben Nevis as well, but my favorite of all is Fluffy Pup's my favorite. Anything that's got a kazoo in it is my favorite.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
Like, who the fuck has a kazoo on an album? Let alone a punk rock album, you know? But
maybe Weird Al. I don't know.
Yeah, Weird Al's big on the goofy instruments.
Yeah, he's more on the accordion, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he's an accordion player. Frankie Yankovic.
But he's not related to Frankie Yankovic, is he?
No, I don't believe he is.
No, he's not. Even though they got the same last name, both accordion players, but no relation. There's got to be
something. My favorite joke in Naked Gun is Frank Drebin thinking the reporters were there for him when he gets off the plane. And George Kennedy goes, no, Frank, Weird Al's on the plane. It makes you forget all the Nordberg jokes you can't laugh at anymore because it's O.J. Simpson.
Yeah. Oh, I tell my students all the time that
boy, it must be funny.
I know that. James Cameron wouldn't hire O.J. Simpson to play the Terminator because he was too nice. That's too good.
There's the title of the episode right there.
They all sit there going, what? Really?
See O.J. walking around knocking on doors. Nicole Simpson.
So, for me, my favorite song is No Sheep Till Buxton. I give this a 7. I think it's a fun record. I like it. John, what about you?
It's a 7. It's as fun as the first record.
Yeah, I think so too.
I can't remember if I graded it or not. I don't know if I did, but it's an 8.5.
Yep. Okay, so, after this, we've got The Beer Necessities. Yes.
The last great good. Macleod's album, unfortunately.
And this one, it's 1990. We've got Alcohol Germans. Very offended by that one. Galatio Nelson, Desperate Dan, Grease Stop, Apprentice Dentist, Man in the Boat, New C. Brown, McCavity, Chester Zoo, Naughty Boy, Mr. Methane, More T. Vicker, Two Stroke Eddie, Animal Testing. That one was good. And Don't Fear the Sweeper. So, Stuart, you said this is the last great Mac Lads record. What do you think?
I think it's the last great Mac Lads record. I just fucking said, twat.
I want to expound upon it. Oh, my God.
Okay. So, anyway, lineup change. Beat is back on guitar. Mötley Stool there. And Stez Sticks, another guy named Stez Sticks, is on drums now. Chorley's gone. And just a side note, the guy who plays Stez Sticks on this also played the opening lounge act for the Mac Lads, Eddie Shit. He would wear a tank top and a big handlebar mustache, and all his songs would be parody songs based around shitting in a toilet, pretty much. He had Gene Pitney's 24 Hours from Tulsa, changed to 24 Hours on Toilet, with Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody to Bohemian Crapsody, and it's just a fucking scream. I've got I should say, there's four Mac Lads DVDs, which is a compilation of all their home videos. I believe it's all their home videos that they had back in the old VHS days. And some of the stuff on there is so funny. It's just like the Beer Necessities home video, which is just a collection of video clips with a small story threaded through it. And that shit is probably some of the funniest 30 minutes I've ever seen. It's unbelievable. It's that funny. And just their live shows and Sex Pies and Videotape live shows on there, which is really funny. So anyway, the songs on here are just nonstop, just like one after the other after the other. There's no filler on this album for me at all. I really like Stez Sticks as a drummer on this, just as much as I like Chorley. The beater sound was sorely missed on the last album. Yeah, as much as I like McCavity's playing, his guitar sound itself wasn't quite with it with me. And yeah, I just the songs on here. Starts off with Alcohol, Straight into Germans, which is probably one of the funniest ones I ever did. Thing I should say as well, I'll put a link to it in the show notes. As I said earlier, the Mac Lads are very difficult to understand if you don't know their dialect and their pronunciation of words. The song like Germans, you do need to go and read the I had to go to their website to grab the lyrics. I'm like, what the fuck's Mötley rattling on about? It was just incomprehensible because he's singing that fast. But just Beer Necessities trods along with one great song after the other for me. It's just, I can't pick any filler on there at all. I will say I don't particularly enjoy this version of Felicio Nelson. I do like the one on the Bog and Roll Circus EP instead. That's a better one. But that's about the only complaint I've got with this album.
I mean, I thought it was pretty solid all the way through. I didn't have any big problems with it. John, what about you?
I thought it was solid. Some of the jokes and the songs, of course, it's a little uneven for me. It's still pretty much worth listening to if you like the other albums. You still want to listen to this because you got at least three or four really good tunes, and I like the song Germans, even though I don't understand the damn thing in it. But and I've got to go hunt the lyrics down after we're done recording. But
once you've read them, you'll say, "Oh shit, this is
right, funny. Right." Yeah. Oh, that's.
Yeah. No, you see them getting a little edgier with their humor here, and the next album goes a little further. Just put it that way.
But I mean, for me, this is a 9. It's my second favorite of theirs. I just listen to it over. I think when I put it on, I don't even skip any tracks. I just go from start to finish all the way through.
Yeah,
you know, songs like Mr. Methane are silly, but I mean, you know, I don't think you're ever going to hear a song dedicated to a guy who farts and disgustingly long farts peppered throughout the song. But, you know, I find it funny still. Yeah. And their home video for this, where they took Mr. Methane out on tour with them, they would have him propped up on a table, you know, on his back with his legs in the air, and they would have, you know, various road crew members come out, one guy with his arm broken and Mr. Methane would fart at him, and all of a sudden he'd have a cured broken arm. It's just ridiculous, but still good for a laugh. Try and track down those DVDs if you can. Good luck. I'll get to their availability of stuff a little bit later on, towards the end there. What about you, John?
I'd give it probably for a rating. I give it probably a 6.5. I mean, it's still funny, but you know, it's just. No, I think the other two that I rated a 7 are better, which I think were the first and third ones.
I think this one's a 7 for me. I think it's a lot of fun, pretty consistent. You know,
see what's interesting.
I liked it more than the second one. Yeah,
yeah. What's interesting here is the fact that when I thought, I did think about you guys, and I said, I don't know how it's going to translate to you two, but from what I've noticed, pretty much every album's got a pass mark.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, I haven't hated anything.
No, not at all. I mean, I think they all kind of run together in my head a little bit. Because they're all very similar. The concept is drinking beer, you know, winches and VD and whatever else.
It's a one joke idea stretched to an entire album several times.
But that was basically my 20s. That was my whole 20s. Just beer and sex and women. That was it. Yeah, debauched lifestyle. So that's probably why I relate to it a lot more.
Degenerate, but you know.
Ah, it's called living.
Degenerate.
It's called fucking living, you fucking pansies.
It's not the way to. It's not a way to a woke AF lifestyle, man.
Yeah.
So the next and final album we have 1994, the Macleods' Alehouse Rock.
Good title.
We have 16 songs. We've got Piles, Alehouse Rock, Back on the Pies Again, Tart with the Heart, Vigilante Shanty, Prestbury Girls, Village Idiot, Frog Bashing, very offensive there, Gone Fishing, Rockwilers, Father's Day, Turtles Heads, guess what that's about, Dirty Glass, Thinking in the Dark, Helen of Fowie, and Hen Night. Hen Night's practically a prog song for these people. this is their final record. I gotta say, Dirty Glass I thought was a little prophetic, maybe.
This one's different. It's just, I've just never gotten into it.
There's it's a little more story driven almost. Like there's a lot of storytelling in it almost.
I'm just talking musically more than lyrically. I mean, lyrically, it's fine. You know, it's on par with the others. But songs like Father's Day, where Mötley's trying to do a ballad, I'm sorry. I really like Mötley, but you ain't a ballad singer. You're not you're not David Coverdale. You're Mötley. And it's just disjointed. Is you know?
I think with this one, they're getting kind of old. They want to, you know, because the Macleods concept is a lads concept.
Yeah.
And they're 10 years on.
Yeah.
Probably a little old to be doing this kind of music.
Well, the thing
and so it's coming through here.
Yeah. The thing was as well, you had 4 years from Beer Necessities as an album. You had the Turtles Heads EP in 91, which is just terrible. I mean, I don't like it. I don't know if they're trying to take the piss with the way they did the songs in it. It could be the way. But from Beer Necessities to here, you got 4 years. Before that, you had every year there was a release of some sort, pretty much, whether it be an EP or two or an album. So, I don't know. Look, I may be wrong. It just sounds like by 94, things had changed musically. You know, grunge had pretty much come in and just, I don't know, time had just passed the Macleods by. I mean, having said that, there's some fucking great songs in here still, but the whole thing just feels a little disjointed. Should mention the band as well. The beat is gone. Stez Dix is gone. On drums, you got... Oh, I can't remember who it was. Somebody or another. The original Stez Dix drummer from the first album is now on guitar here, known as Johnny Mard. So it's pretty much like a Mötley solo effort, it feels like. And like the whole country rock thing, I just don't get it. Alehouse Rock itself is a good song. Really good song. But some of the others, I'm not feeling it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weaker album. I didn't even get through it because I was cramming all my listening of these guys in the last few days. And
God forbid
listening
to
it,
a bit more pre-planned, right?
Yeah, it's not the best way to appreciate them because I did not I think it was kind of going to be the extended joke with every album, but this album sounded tired, actually.
Yeah, I kind of thought it seemed a little, they were kind of, they're not the Mac lads anymore.
No. Like I said, it feels like a Mötley solo effort. And I kind of wish it came out as just Mötley's album and left the last one, Beer Necessities, as a Mac lads album, as the final one. So anyway, would I recommend this album? Yeah, for completists, would I recommend anybody starting the Mac lads with this?
No,
because you'll get the wrong idea, you get the wrong, you know, everything about it. Leave it till last to listen to.
I think it's the most different out of all of them, for sure.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I kind of wish it was just maybe a 10-track album, and you could have pulled about. I've got about 7 on there I really like, and you know, say 3 fillers. I would have been a bit more lenient with it. But yeah, it's the one I pull for the
list. So what would your rating be?
Oh, it's tough. See, the ones in there I do like, I like. But the ones in there that are bad, they're not good. And I don't like the guitar sound. It sounds very thin, this album.
Yeah.
I'm like 4.5 to 5.
Oh, that's low.
Yeah, And it's only because the others are so good that this one's a massive step down for me. I mean, I couldn't go a 7 or anything. It's just, nah. And even songs like Rockwilders are good, but the whole album just sounds like a mixed bag of just stuff thrown together. So, you know, if anybody in the Mac Lads Facebook group is listening to this, they're probably thinking, oh, you fucking idiot, but that's the way it is for me.
I mean, I'd give it a 6. I think it's it has some really good songs, but as far as if you're looking at the Mac Lads as a concept, this is not an album to really look at unless you're a big fan.
Not at all. Are you, John?
5. Yeah, a couple of good tunes, but it's an old man record.
Old man record, yeah.
It's like geezer punk. I mean, there was a trend, actually sometime after this, well, I guess the late 90s, where you got a lot of geezer punk rock records from guys like the Rubber City Rebels and groups like that. And the only ones who did the Rubber City Rebels did a really good record, probably their best ever. And then the Dictators did their best ever, which was a complete surprise. And
DFFD.
Yeah. And, but you know, I'm sure there's others I could go back and find, like by the Dickies, that weren't really up to snuff. So, it's just, you know, it's the, everybody I guess is entitled to the geezer record.
One thing I will say, though, is that I feel there was a missed opportunity in the 80s with the Mac Lads. And with that, I mean, there should have been a film about them. We got one about the Clash. We got a Sex Pistols film, pretty much, with the Great Rock and Roll Swindle. But I don't see why around about 86, 87, there wasn't a Mac Lads film made.
I'll tell you why, because you can't put them on the old Grey Whistle Test.
Nah, doesn't matter.
No, but see, if you're promoting a movie, you need a band that you can put on TV, and maybe even by then they just couldn't, like maybe the BBC or Thames or whoever was operating at that time with music shows, they're not going to put these guys on. And I don't know if England has some equivalent of HBO that might allow more graphic programming, but I just wouldn't expect it. Right. I think it's a problem. You probably could have done like a word of mouth midnight movie. Sort of thing.
Oh,
like a
sure.
Mac Lads.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah. I mean, nothing stopping someone like, say, Julian Temple doing a Mac Lads film. I mean,
right. But however, the regional aspect of them, like, they could be completely rejected in southern England.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I don't know how big they are in England or how well known they are. It's like when you Google for articles and stuff, you get like articles from these English towns you've never heard of.
Yeah, from Macclesfield and, you
know, right. Warrington, it's just like, yeah. Like, what is this newspaper, you know? And then you'll get some apologetic article about him in The Guardian, you know? It's not, I don't think they're that well known even in England. It's kind of like, I suspect in the 70s, Lynyrd Skynyrd wasn't huge up at, like, in the north of the United States.
Mm.
They were a big southern rock act. And, of course, now they're more accepted all over, but I don't know if regionalism might affect an act in England that's very based in their hometown and football and all that stuff, the football club, soccer to Americans.
Yeah, yeah, but that was something I thought about. It was an opportunity gone begging there. Yeah,
but you know, there are so many bands you could say that about. If only there was a film, if only there was something showing the visual aspect or how fun the concerts were, it would have helped. But there's a lot of groups like that.
Oh, you couldn't get a Deep Purple film. I mean, it just, yeah, what would you do?
Although I think there was, you know.
Was there?
I swear I think I've seen film footage of Deep Purple, like it was done for a potential Midnight movie. I mean, they always film these guys in 16mm or 35 with the intent of maybe making a concert movie. Well, and then you get unwatchable stuff like the punk rock movie or whatever, just because it had the last footage of Sid Vicious. Or even the Great Rock and Roll Swindle is a complete fuck up if you watch it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's disjointed as fuck, but I mean, I like it still.
It's because Johnny Rotten wouldn't have anything to do
with it. No, that's right, he wouldn't have. And all he had was Sid Vicious was the archival footage. That was all.
Right.
But, yeah, no, Great Rock and Roll Swindle's got some good stuff in it.
Yeah.
Nothing like seeing Ronnie Biggs in a movie.
That was Johnny Rotten's big sticking point with it.
Because Ronnie Biggs was in it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
he was a criminal who stole money from the people, you know. So.
Yeah.
All right, fellas. Well, let's go ahead and wrap this one up.
I will just say about if you want to listen to their stuff, I don't know if they're on Shitify at all. That's a Spotify.
Get their nickel royalty.
I'm sorry, I don't bother with Spotify anymore, since when you do register, they've got on there male, female, or non-binary, so they can go get fucked. It's got nothing to do with that crap.
Also, it eats up your hard drive. I don't care for the service.
Nah. But if you do want to purchase their albums, you are going to have to go through Amazon UK, most likely. And there was a bunch of double releases that was put out by Cherry Red Records in the mid-2000s. They're the ones I've got, which were... the first one was Beer Sex with Bitterfit Crackers, the second CD. Second one, Live at Leeds with From Beer to Eternity. Third one was Beer Necessities and Ale House Rockers as a second disc. The fourth one was... The Greatest Hits, the 20 Golden Crates album. And the second disc on that was a lot of the EPs bundled together. Not all the EPs, but most of the EPs bundled together on one album. And that one was called An Orifice and a Genital. yeah, those of you who don't know that, while they're laughing, it's obviously take on the Richard Gere, Officer and a Gentleman. So, yeah, that's why. But, you can get a couple of those still. I know you can get the Beer Sex one. That's a necessity to purchase. That will be in the show notes, a link to buy that. It's not very expensive either. It's about £10, something like that. And I think the other one you can get is Beer Necessities, Ale House Rock. I'd say pick them up and try and track down the others. As for their DVDs, I'll put a link to their shop on Screen Edge, who is the distributor of their DVDs. I've bought from them before. They're perfectly legit. I had no problems with them at all. They're very good. And try and grab those, because I think they're starting to disappear. And once they're gone, I dare say they'll be gone. So that's where you can buy their stuff. Them reforming, why not? I mean, it's a shame not coming here, but, you know, I'll let's see how it pans out. I'm sure there'll be YouTube footage somewhere once they start doing the shows. So let's wait and see how that pans out. But I say thank God for the humor of the Macleods. And Hunter, I want to ask you something as well, just quickly, all right? Don't get offended by this, by what I'm saying, because it is relevant. Would you have been as, I don't know if reviled is the word I'm looking for, but as offended by this if you weren't a newlywed?
No.
Because now you're literally a newlywed, less than a couple of months, right?
Yes.
So you're with your wife, you're in love with your wife, you're besotted with her, and you do all these things. Does that make the Macleods lyrics a bit more offensive to you? Because you're now in that mindset.
I mean, it might, but I think that graphic descriptions of diseases are, you know, revolting in any context.
Scabby bits.
Yeah, exactly.
See, I just thought about that because my thinking is you're a newlywed, whereas I don't know how long you've been with your wife, John, from the time you met her to now, but myself, who's been with someone for a long time, a long, long, long time, and sometimes feels like an insanely fucking long time. The Macleods are not so much offensive as they are a revelation with their lyrics. So that's what my angle was with that, just to see where it was from somebody who's with a woman who's newlywed to compare to someone who's been with the same wench for fuck knows how long, too long sometimes.
yeah, that was it. But anyway, that's it. Week one, Rock Month, in the can. Done.
In the can.
Yeah.
Yep. And we should say that next week's episode usually would be Hunter's, but we're going to flip-flop it around this year.
Yeah. We're going to do John's.
Going to do John's next week. Week three will be back to Hunter's, and then week four will be, as usually, Collective. So, if you boys have nothing else, give us your sign-off.
Adios.
Corporations suck.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Thatcher.
Thatcher who?
Thatcher mother getting rogered at the gangbang the other night. At the start she was nice and tight. By the end, you get your fist in any orifice. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Ivor.
Ivor who?
Ivor massive tool, let's have a gangbang the other night. At the start she was nice and tight. By the end, you get your fist in any orifice. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Ivan.
Ivan who?
I've an even bigger tool. Let's have a gangbang the other night. And the start was nice and tight. By the end, you get your fist in any orifice. Aye, aye, aye. And the gangbang the other night. And the start was nice and tight. By the end, you get your fist in any orifice.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.